So,
this is going to be the last session in the history of the West, lecture discussion series. And last time we sort of barely got through the 30s, and so we're going to be covering today, recovering some of the issues from the 30s, and taking it up into the post-war period. Whether we'll make it to 68 or not is, we'll see. I think that the goal is really to bring us from the 30s to the crisis of the old left in 56. That forms the backdrop for the genesis of the new left. Richard?
May I make some introductory comments about the period of social?
Go ahead.
Originally, when the course was conceived, we thought a lot about the issue of periodization. We got somewhat off track because of practical issues. But essentially, the original idea was we're dealing with three periods, one of which is 1923 to 1939, and then 1939 to 1956. These are not necessarily exact. And then 1956 through 1968. This might be called the New Left, which we spent a lot of time discussing last summer. And this is sort of the central period, which is, for our standpoint, really Trotskyism and the Frankfurt School. And the middle period is an interesting theoretical question, because by 1939, this period is a result of the crisis that stems from the recession of the revolutionary tide of 1917 to 1923. So it's a period of theoretical creativity, I would say, of which, from our standpoint, Trotskyism and the Frankfurt School represent the highest example. There was a discussion earlier about what we're leaving out from the history of the left, and we can talk about that. And the new left, of course, we talked about its theoretical significance for us also a lot last summer. We spent the whole summer reading the New Left Review. The new, one of the two reading groups that's starting will be focused, again, largely on that. Now, the significance of 1939 to 1956, originally there had been a period of 45 to 68. In 1939 to 56 is a period of the dual crisis. It's a crisis of both Trotskyism and Stalinism. If there had not been essentially the disintegration of Trotskyism and the Frankfurt School by the time the New Left came about, in a sense, you wouldn't have had the New Left, or you would have had a New Left that looked completely different from what it did. In fact, it would have seen itself more directly as a continuation of the old left. And this period is, of course, the main event. We date it from, really, you could date 1939 as, on the one hand, the Hitler-Stalin pact. Another thing you could date it by is the end, of course, of the Spanish Civil War. The significance of the Spanish Civil War, I would say, is not directly ideological, but it's really the final defeat of the potential of the European Revolution, something which would not have been necessarily seen at the time. In fact, one of Trotsky's expectations was that the Second World War would open up a new wave of revolutionary revolutions in its aftermath. That did not happen. So one of the fundamental reasons for the crisis of Trotskyism has to be understood, and also in a somewhat different sense, the crisis of the Frankfurt School, has to be that the Second World War and its ideological consequences, both the character of the Second World War and what happened afterward, was radically different. The First World War could be understood in a classic understanding of inter-imperialist conflict. Second World War presented a much more complicated ideological problem, because almost everybody really on the left had a side. Even though it was an inter-imperialist conflict, it was an inter-imperialist conflict that differed from the First World War in two fundamental respects. On the one hand, Nazi Germany, there was no analog to Nazi Germany during the First World War, and Nazi Germany was opposed by a coalition, on the one hand, of the Soviet Union, which leftists wanted to defend in some way, and the democratic Western powers. So it seemed the battle between bourgeois democracy and Stalinism on one side and Nazism, fascism on the other, and thus supporting the Allies as opposed to opposition to imperialism to a core became anti-fascism. In other words, you have two ideals that were in a sense counterposed, anti-fascism versus the older model of anti-imperialism. And also, of course, the immediate crisis of 1939 triggered off a very immediate crisis, certainly in the Trotskyist movement because of the Hitler-Stalin pact. It immediately precipitated a split, the split between, in the United States, what would be called the Kennanites, or who were backed by Trotsky, and the Shachtmanite split. The Shachtmanites essentially said, well, look, you know, the Soviet Union signed the Hitler-Stalin pact, the Soviet Union invaded Finland. The Soviet Union has become so degenerated, it's really a new form of capitalism, and we need to have a third way between Soviet Stalinism and capitalism.
A third camp.
A third camp. And this was a split that had and continues to have ideological ramifications in those parts of the left that are in some way derived from Trotskyism. You see it in terms of the ISO and other groups, and that we can discuss that. Essentially, by 1939, although not formally, the Fourth International had been founded in 1938, essentially the Trotskyist movement never recovered from that split and the crisis of World War II. World War II was in many ways a catastrophe of those Trotskyist movements. I mean, you had direct and brutal fascist repression. Where the resistance was led by leftists, it was led by Stalinists who were happy to murder Trotskyists. In those parts of Europe that were not directly controlled by the Soviet Union and Stalinist regimes afterward, contrary to what the Trotskyist movement had imagined, bourgeois democracy restored itself. So part of the expectation, you know, had hysterical pronunciations by the Trotskyist movement talking about fascism, inter-imperialist war in the aftermath of World War II. None of these came true. There was a tendency actually in the Socialist Workers' Party, the Goldman-Morrow tendency, which said, in counterpart to the majority of the SWP, look, actually bourgeois democracy is reestablishing itself, is becoming firmer in Western Europe, and Stalinism is consolidating itself in Eastern Europe, both of which were directly contrary to Trotsky's predictions. And also you had a kind of complete blindness about what happened in China. So up until the mid-50s, you know, the SWP and a lot of Trotskyists were claiming China was still capitalist and, you know, kind of denying all sorts of obvious sociological transformations that had occurred as a result of the Chinese Revolution. Again, because a certain orthodoxy, basically Trotsky's predictions, did not account for the victory of the Chinese Revolution. And we have to look at that in terms of understanding how the later Trotskyist movement and people who trace their allegiance to Trotskyism would then become so disoriented by new developments, particularly in the later 50s, and particularly stemming out of decolonization. A large section, for example, of the Trotskyist movement thought that Yugoslavia was fundamentally different from the Soviet Union because Tito was manifesting political independence from Stalin. And there was all sorts of ideological confusion, disorientation, factional fights, and the Fourth International itself split from 1951 to 53. There was a split over something called Pabloism. Pabloism essentially amounted to a adaptation of Trotskyism towards Stalinism. And then later it came back together in the Reunification Conference of 1963. And the genesis of Spartacism as a political tendency came from a movement within the Socialist Workers' Party that opposed that reunification, which they saw as a capitulation to Pabloism. We don't have to go into the whole sectarian history. And the other thing, of course, that happened, particularly around 56, particularly after 56, but to some extent, for example, in some continents before, is decolonization of the Third World. 1939, the only politics that really mattered were, in a sense, European, and you had the United States and Japan, of course, which were major capitalist imperialist powers. But largely, you could say world politics was focused on Europe. And in the post-war era, of course, that changed. And the way people understood decolonization and what was going on, I think, led to a series of confusions. And I think that, although we may not have time to specifically focus on this period is a particularly rich and undervalued period. The period between kind of the high Marxism of the 20s and 30s and the New Left. And I just want to focus that because I wanted to explain the original logic of our periodization. And then I guess we're going to focus more back on the 30s.
We're going to reprise some of the issues.
Reprise some of the 30s. But I wanted to give people sort of the big picture of like our understanding of the trajectory. And I also wanted to make one other comment about 1968. We were very deliberate in using 1968 as a marker rather than 1973. And you will see in, for example, Postone, an emphasis on 1973. Maybe this is not the right time to get into it, but the distinction of 1968, which is a political choice, versus 1973, which is a socioeconomic choice, actually gets to fundamental ideological, political questions, which we can discuss later.
That's a good point. All right, so where to begin? Maybe I should... I wanted to reprise some of the issues of Trotskyism versus the Frankfurt School that we rushed through at the end of the last session. I laid out the fact that both Trotskyism and the Frankfurt School represent the effect of a certain kind of disintegration on the left that occurs after 1923. I talked about it in terms of the possibility slash impossibility of an internal critique, Trotskyism, and the possibility and impossibility of an external critique, meaning by the Frankfurt School, in this period because of Stalinization. Right, so you have these sort of dissident Marxist currents, and there are others also besides Trotskyism and the Frankfurt School, but those are sort of, for us, the privileged ones. Someone that we've read in the past, Karl Korsch, for example, is part of a trajectory that is neither Frankfurt School nor Trotskyist. That's Council Communism. So the internal and external critique problem of the Stalinization of the left, then also the problem of conceptualizing fascism and conceptualizing Stalinism itself. So I last time offered the interpretation that Trotskyism had to offer a good interpretation and analysis and critique, as well as the politics of anti-Stalinism. Whereas the Frankfurt School, relative to Trotskyists, was much better at conceptualizing fascism. Because Trotsky tended to see fascism as a recrudescence, as a reaction in the sense of a throwback, historically, to an earlier formation. The orthodox perspective on fascism, by the way, was that it's Bonapartism. Bonapartism meaning that people took Marx's analysis of Louis Bonaparte, Napoleon III, from the era of the Second Empire, his coup against the Second Republic in France, and they extrapolated that to describe fascism in the 20th century, whether of the Mussolini variety or of the Hitler variety. Bonapartism is when the state rises above the conflict of classes and seeks to hold together the social contradictions. So in other words, one of the things that Marx tried to capture in the concept of Bonapartism that 20th century Marxists followed him on was, what about the plebeian support for reaction? Napoleon III got a lot of peasant support. He also got a lot of what Marx would call the lumpen proletariat to support him. And similarly, those people who were wont to analyze fascism in this more traditional sense saw saw Hitler support coming from the petty bourgeoisie, and that's, you know, a notoriously bad category, and the lumpen proletariat, meaning, of course, one of the things that the left is faced with after 28, 29 is the Great Depression. So one of the formulations that people will come up with in the Trotskyist movement that's sort of indicative and damning is that if Hitler had working class support, it was only from unemployed workers who, by virtue of their unemployment, lost the connection to their class, right? Which is an awful interpretation. Frankfurt School, on the other hand, and we talked about this last time, was concerned with looking at what they called authoritarianism in the working class. So Erich Fromm and Max Horkheimer led a study in the late 20s, early 30s of working class attitudes of authoritarianism in the working class called Studies on Authority in the Family, in which they discovered, to their shock and chagrin, that the working class was much more politically reactionary than they would have liked to have believed as Marxists who put their faith in the working class. And they suppressed their own study because they thought it would have a bad political effect, that it would be demoralizing for the left to publish the study. Later, they revisited that issue in the post-war period in the United States on the Authoritarian Personality Project.
Could you name the title of that book again? That's
Studies on Authority in the Family. And the Family, not in the family, and the family. And it was an attempt, because Fromm was coming from a psychoanalytic background, and he was a practicing psychoanalyst, to synthesize a Marxian and psychoanalytic Freudian approach. Right? In the way that they studied people's attitudes, they did questionnaires, but it was qualitative, not just quantitative. Meaning, they interviewed people. They had people fill out questionnaires, and they also interviewed people. And both in the formulation of questions and also in the interviews, they brought to bear psychoanalytic methodology.
It should also be pointed out that there was, particularly in places like the United States, there was a common move often of intellectuals, say from the 30s to 50s, from a Marxist paradigm to a psychoanalytic paradigm. So it was a very common trajectory. Not that those are necessarily opposed, but that a certain disillusionment with Marxism often led to.
Right, and one of the texts that we've read in the reading group is by Wilhelm Reich, and it's from the immediate aftermath of the Nazi seizure of power, where it's from the book The Psychopathology of Psychopathology of Fascism, where specifically he talks about Marxism in the past tense, not because he's anti-Marxist, but because after Hitler's rise to power, it really looks like Marxism had come to a certain kind of end as a viable politics and needed to be seriously reconsidered and reworked through in order to continue at all. So, laying this out because this 39 moment, the crisis with the Hitler-Stalin pact, it really threw the entire left into disarray. It threw the Stalinist left, the fellow travelers of the communists, the liberal left, as well as the Trotskyist left, as well as people like the Frankfurt School. Everyone was traumatized by 1939. 1939, Hitler-Stalin pact, it should be said, because from an American standpoint, we have this bias about the way we date World War II. World War II broke out in 1939. It broke out because the Hitler-Stalin pact allowed for the partition of Poland. It allowed for the Nazis to invade Eastern Europe. And essentially what the Stalinists did, what Stalin and the USSR did, was that they moved their front line against the Nazis away from their previous borders into, further west into Europe, anticipating that they would be fighting the Nazis eventually. David?
And then we could even date it earlier than that, with like sort of the Japanese beginning to move into China and the Italians in Ethiopia. So just sort of the march of fascism actually in its sort of actual war manifestations or even earlier than the 39 moment.
That's right.
Well, first of all, the Hitler-Stalin pact actually like precedes the formal.
Well, there's the phony war.
Right, and there's the phony war from 39
to 40. And then there's the invasion of France, and then the US gets involved later.
Right. And what the significance of the specific invasion is that the Stalinists who have been
the defenders of democracy
and essentially pushing for an anti-fascist
unity,
suddenly in 1939 flip over to seeing the World War in the apparently orthodox term
as anti-imperialist.
As this is just an imperialist fight between the British and French imperialists and the German imperialists. And the workers have no side. The difference between Hitler and the British and French is no difference. And then they completely reverse themselves again, suddenly in June of 1941. And then immediately, it's back to you drive the fascist beast out and support the
Communists. Time out.
Richard, yeah.
What's going on?
I have an orientation group meeting here right now. Sorry.
Okay.
We have the reserve schedule. Like, we have the unreserved stuff.